Hey, yes. Welcome to the first full morning of this 9-day retreat. In the mornings at this time, as I mentioned last night, I'll give a talk on meditation, and there'll be an opportunity for asking questions by putting those questions on sheets of paper in the evening. But now is the time just to go back on just what we're doing here with this way of meditation. For those of you who remember last night, I was going to the heart of the meditation practice, which is learning how to let go, learning how to release the mind, to free it by putting down your burdens, by throwing things away, by giving up all those words which are the way that the mind just relinquishes its hold on the sensory world. To be able to do that is a difficult thing, and it's very easy for someone like me who's been meditating for many years to be able to teach, just put it down, just let it go. But because of the stickiness of this world, the stickiness of sounds, of sights, of memories, we have to find these ways and means, these skillful means of being able to encourage, incite, allow the mind to let go. Even though I talk like this, it's going to happen naturally after a while, because of the conditioning, the brainwashing, the keeping on harping on the same thing. Sooner or later, just the mind gives up and lets go, and you find the meaning of what I'm talking about. Even remember the first meditation retreat I did was a young student. I was only about 18, 19, I think, roughly around my 19th birthday, give or take a month or two. And I was doing this meditation retreat, didn't know what I was doing, but nevertheless I managed to one day just let go enough to get a nice bliss state coming up. And of course, just one experience like that changes your whole life. Just to be able to see just what's possible with this mind and get such an incredible experience, and all because you never tried, you never did anything. Very often that when people get those experiences, and if they come and tell me about them, one of the first questions I always ask is, what did you do? Why did that state come about? And they always say the same thing: they really let go. They just didn't do anything. They just sat there and it happened. And those anecdotes should reinforce the message of what this meditation is all about. To be able to learn how to let go, to abandon, to renounce, to put things down. So that is the basic part of this meditation retreat. Don't think this meditation retreat is to get insight or to get jhana or to get anything. This is all about putting things down, putting things away. So don't meditate with expectations. See what expectations you can throw away. Don't meditate counting the time, as I said yesterday. Throw all the time away. Don't carry any burdens from your past, or don't reach out to burdens in the future. This is unburdening the mind in this meditation. Letting it go, leaving it alone. Now, one of the reasons why that we don't allow things to disappear is actually three reasons. One is that we think we own these things, we have to do something about this world. It's a sense of a self, which I was mentioning yesterday. Whenever there's a sense of me or mine, there'll always be a controller around. That's actually just what you do. It's what a self is, what an ego, what a soul is, if you like, is a controller. That's why in the Judeo-Christian tradition, who is the biggest control freak would be a god. That's why, the biggest ego has the biggest amount of control. The least ego has the least amount of control. The more that you can let go, the more of your sense of self, the more you let go of control. So one way of actually meditating is just to disappear. able to disappear. It's just, and there's nobody in here. So why just make all of these demands upon myself? Why am I judging myself for being a good meditator or a bad meditator? Just allow yourself to disappear. Part of that allowing yourself to disappear is just asking yourself, how much do you own anyway? What belongs to you? When you actually start to really investigate what belongs to you, what is your possessions, you found pretty quickly that your family does not belong to you. They are not your family. You just happen to be born into that group of people. So as long as you think that they are your family, then you'll always have to worry what they're doing and turn on your mobile phones. They are not your family. They're just beings who happen to be around for a while. If you can only remember your many, many past lives, just the whole number of times you've had families, which is your real family? As soon as you put the word my family, my husband, my wife, my son, my daughter, then you have ownership and you have a burden. In this retreat, family is called not my business. Somebody else's business for this retreat. Your possessions, you don't really own them. You can't take them with you. They are not my business. Your work, your business, your job, not my business. You're on holiday now. All those external things which we think about, not my business. When you say it's not my business, then you are able to let them go. You're able to put them down. They don't come up into your mind so often and just disturb you. So whatever these thoughts of family, of possessions, of business come up, always remember that word, not my business, nothing to do with me, not mine. Not me, not mine, not a self. And then when you go deeper, this idea of future and past, which keeps on obsessing people, that should be very clear. That is not mine. It's not your past. Let it go, it's gone. Don't try and drag it from the past into the present moment. Carrying around the past is very much like carrying the coffins of dead moments on your head. The stack of coffins of all of your past moments, no wonder people have headaches. So let go of all those dead stuff which is called the past. You don't own it. Bury it, cremate it, throw it away, give it a Tibetan sky funeral. Just let the birds eat the past and have done with it. But if you think that it is your past, it is mine, good or bad, then it is your business. And when it's your business, it's called attachment, you can't put it down or let it go. You'll keep disturbing your meditation. It's not my business. Not me, not mine, not a self, this past. And the future is also not your business. You're out of control. You can't do anything. The future just happens according to its own causes, not according to what you want. I don't know how many times you wanted something to happen and it hasn't happened, and how many times you wanted something not to happen and it has. That just shows you don't control the future. So get real, leave the future alone. It's none of my business. I'll tell you what your business is, the present moment. That's the only business you have. So be responsible to your business at hand right now. Past and future, not my business. It's not mine. Any thoughts which come up into your mind, this inner commentary, again, where did those thoughts come from? If you look very carefully, are they your thoughts? Did you make those thoughts? How many times have you been sitting there and just a thought has come? It didn't come from me. I didn't make that thought. I didn't want that thought. It's just there. Isn't that very clear that the thinking mind, the thoughts, are not yours? So it's not my business. So you have these thoughts come in the head, nothing to do with me. So you don't worry about them, you don't try and get rid of them. You can't get rid of them because it's not your business to get rid of them. You don't try and hold them. It's not your business anymore. You let them go. For those of you who try to stop your thinking and try and control it and suppress it and just stomp on it, you find you're making business out of those thoughts, and that's why they will never disappear. You say, not me, not mine, nothing to do with me, not my business. If you do that properly, all the thinking mind just stops. It's not your business, nothing to do with me. So it just disappears. It, as they say in the modern jargon, it falls off your radar screen. So you just don't think. This body, with its bad guts, with its stomach ache, with its headaches, with whatever else aches you've got, with its bone cancer, this body, again, it's not my business. It doesn't belong to me. So if it wants to itch, it can itch. If it wants to ache, it can ache. But nothing to do with me. Not my business. If you start watching your breath, watching the breath go in and go out, it's not my business. You can do whatever it wants. You can go in and go out and go sideways for all I care. But you just leave the breath alone. It can stop breathing. Not my business. You can see the word not my business as a way of detaching. Nothing to do with me. It's using what we call the perception of non-self, or rather non-ownership, to allow the mind to let go. And when you get even to the deeper meditations, be very careful not to own the deep meditations either. You might get these beautiful lights in the mind. Don't think, at last I've got my nimitta. If you put the MY on the end of whatever you're experiencing in a meditation, or on the beginning of what you're experiencing, you are stuffing up, you are stopping the whole process happening. It's not your nimitta. Say to that, nothing to do with me, not my business. If you can do that, it will stay, it will be still, it will be stable. As soon as you get involved, then you start to mess things up. It's this ability to be able to observe and disengage, just to silently watch. You can only do that if it is not your business. When you come to a retreat center like this, do you really worry about sort of cleanliness, the colours of the carpet, the walls or the gardens? When you go in the garden, do you ever feel like you should go and mow the lawn or prune the flowers? You don't ever think of doing that out there. Why? Because it's not my business. I don't own this place. I'm just here for a short while. Be the same way with whatever you experience in meditation. If you're watching your breath, just like the garden outside, it's not my business. If it's the painting of the ceilings, it's not my business. Nothing to do with me. The thought comes in the mind, just not my business. That way you can let it go, you can enjoy the moment without attaching, without getting involved, without engaging and controlling and doing stuff. So the first of the ways of letting go is called anatta sanya, the Pali word, the perception of non-self. You keep that in the back of the mind. You just keep on looking at the whole meditation process. It's just a process, that's all, nothing to do with me. And when you disengage, not mine, nothing to do with me, I don't own this, letting go happens naturally. Another way of letting go is doing the anicca sanya, which is the perception of impermanence, uncertainty too. It's going to change anyway, so why hold on to it? Just slipping from my fingers as I watch it. If you remember just how that things are so ephemeral, they come into existence and they disappear again almost immediately. Just all sensations, all activities, all of life, it just comes in and passes through. When people are just passing through, you don't pay too much attention to them, because then they're not going to be important to you. So every moment it's just something passing through. Your family is just something passing through. The only thing is they linger along a bit too long sometimes. Your whole family just passing through. All your wealth and possessions, they're just things passing through your life. Your body, they just pass through your mind. For many of you already quite past it. But anyway, that's what happens. The life just passes through. and you're just sitting here. Have you ever had that sort of perception? You got this mind and you look at your body and it's, you know, 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, 60 years of age. So, you know, it feels the same in the mind. Just this body just passes through. And soon it's 70, 80, then it's dead. It just passes through. So when it's passing through, it's not your problem. Leave it alone. It's just body, even thoughts. They're just visitors passing through. You don't even need to give them the time of day. Thought comes, it'll soon go by itself. Leave it alone. Don't worry about it. Don't attach to it. Don't make it a problem. Don't make more thoughts about thoughts. You think a thought, and you think a thought about the thought, and you think a thought about the thought about the thought, and you go on forever that way. Just leave it alone. Just something passing through, just like the clouds, or like the birds just passing through in the morning. You can hear them now. So all these things are just passing through. The breath just passes through. So you don't hold on to it. It can be soft, it can be rough. Who cares? It's just breath doing its thing. Nothing to do with me. Just all passing through. And even nimittas, they're not going to be there forever. They just pass through. Every mental experience, every physical experience, it just passes through. So when you understand that, it's just like a car which you just see on the highway. It's just whoosh and it's gone. I know sometimes dogs try and chase cars as if, you know, they think that they can get rid of the cars or they can sort of hold the cars. The dogs are stupid. Don't be like a dog chasing your thoughts, trying to get rid of them, bah, 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 trying to chase the thoughts away. Because sometimes that's what people do. They just make more noise, more thoughts. You just need to sit there and it just goes by itself. It's one of the wonderful things in meditation to have the guts, the courage, the faith just to sit there, do nothing and watch everything disappear. It just goes by itself because that's its nature. So whether it's the thoughts, whether it's the body, any other possessions, any other things, whatever happens, even though you may have been hanging out for breakfast this morning, you certainly will be hanging out for breakfast tomorrow morning after not eating this afternoon. How fast does breakfast go? What you hang out for is just gone in a flash. I don't know, whatever you really look forward to, whether it's a dinner or going out somewhere, this great event of your life, getting married or getting ordained or dying or whatever, you don't even need to worry looking for it, because it just goes so quickly. Just dead and it's all gone quickly. You've been waiting all your life for that and only lasts a second or two. So all these things of life are just passing through, so you don't need to anticipate them or expect them or worry about them. Just leave them all alone. Let them go, because they're just passing through. So whatever experience you have, physical, mental, just look at it as just something passing through. Not mine, not important, nothing to make a big deal about. And then you won't grasp them. And because you don't grasp them, the whole world starts to disappear. And the other thing is such as to look at the dukkha-sanya, the perception of suffering. You look at family. Wow, you should have known this by now. Family is a lot of suffering. The more family you have, the more problems of suffering you have. I don't know how many mothers-in-law you've got, fathers-in-law, husbands. I know you maybe you're on your second, third or fourth by now. Sometimes people are masochists. I've had one and they go get another one afterwards. My goodness, some people are real dummies. You know, sometimes you can burn yourself once. You think you put your hand in the fire once and then you take it out. Okay, you get burned once, but 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times. Oh. So all these things, it's like suffering, Sanya. Families are just burdens. You have to worry about them. Those of you who've got a husband, sometimes the people like to go and feed the monks. You know why people like looking after monks? Because monks or nuns are much easier to look after than husbands and wives. You can give them whatever food and never complain. The point is that families are suffering. So because they're suffering, why are you sticking to them? Isn't it wonderful that you're free of these things? You've got 9 days where you don't have to think about your husband, about your wife, about anything. Look, there's an old story, a metaphor, if you haven't heard this before, in the Teri Gata. These are the verses of the enlightened nuns. And these nuns had it together. They understood what it was like being a renunciant. And in poem after poem, they wrote about their enlightened experience. They were delighting in the fact that they had given up the three crooked things. The three crooked things which a nun gives up. And number one is the house broom. The old sort of little brooms which you used to sweep the house clean had this crooked handle. And they call that the first crooked thing. It means that they've given up housework. So you've given up your housework. So abandon your house. Don't think about it for the rest of the 9 days. The next crooked thing that they said they'd given up was the ladle, which was the symbol for cooking. They'd given up the cooking as well. And the third crooked thing they'd given up, the husband. Those were the three crooked things which nuns said they gave up. That's really funny when it said the husband was the third crooked thing. And all you wives, you can relate to that, I'm sure. So the point is, you've given it up. And you could say the same as like a man who just left his family and gone to the monastery. They've given up, you know, their three crooked things. You know, I don't know what their three crooked things, and maybe the wrench to fix the car, maybe the golf club, the third one that was. But the point is that it was noticed, these just were burden of suffering. So why are you carrying around things which are a burden and an affliction and suffering? If you can realize that, it's very easy to let things go. When you realize what you're picking up is a bunch of pain and suffering and problems, it makes it easy just to abandon it, let it go. So whatever you hold on to, ask yourself, is this a heap of suffering and affliction, a burden I'm carrying? And you remember that, and it makes it much easier to put aside. Which is why that I've often used that for a metaphor for letting go of time. Because I've put, before many times I have used the metaphor of these two heavy suitcases, the one in your left hand packed with your past, the one in your right hand stuffed with your future. And I mention that because some of you have come from overseas. I should have been here to check how many bags you brought in from overseas. And even if it's not just overseas, it's just from the next suburbs, Brick Park or somewhere, how many bags you brought in here, my goodness. What have you got all that bags for? It's just a burden. It's so heavy. Now, we also carry the two heavy suitcases of the past and the future. That's wonderful when you don't have so many things to carry. And if you should, those of you who have seen me arrive at the airport, whether it's in Penang or in Singapore or in Melbourne, wherever you've come from, how many bags do I carry? And I live very happily. So don't carry so much burdens. That's suffering. Now the main point here is actually to associate this, all the past you carry around. What happened to you? Who did what to whom and when and how? Sometimes that's like carrying this big suitcase full of heavy rocks. And you're carrying that for years and years and years. And now and again, you have the guts to throw it away, to let go of some part of the past. Then what you do, you fill your suitcase up with more things instead. Your family belongs to the past. All your experiences, your business, whatever, all belongs to the past. So when you understand this past business is a big, heavy suitcase, and just how much it makes your brain ache, then it gives you the incentive just to put it down, to leave it alone, to let it go, to disengage. You put the suitcase down on the floor, you move your hand away from the handle. It's called disengaging. It's not enough just to put it down. You've got to move the hand away from the grip. Really let it go, and it just disappears. There for you afterwards, but it's much lighter. The same with the future. Fears, expectations, what you want. It's a lot of suffering, the future. Isn't it wonderful when you've got no plans, nothing to think about? That's why sometimes I love going overseas, because I don't plan anything when I go overseas. Someone's at the airport, They have to get me to the airport in time to get the plane back. I don't have to worry about anything. They feed me, look after me. It's great when you sort of, you know, go overseas. You don't have to think about anything or plan anything. Even the talks, I never plan them. Who knows what's going to happen next? You are in the same fortunate position now on this retreat. You don't have to plan or think about anything. You just sit there and 7 o'clock I ring the gong and breakfast suddenly appears. You don't even need to make it. There's a light coming at 11 o'clock. You don't even need to do anything. You don't have to do anything for the future. Just leave it alone. Everything is just so safe and secure. You don't have to have any telephone calls. No writing, no letters. Nothing to plan or to think about or do. You're completely disempowered from the past and the future. And when you understand just how much freedom that is, as they say, to get away from it all, far from the madding crowd, just in a place of seclusion and peace, where all the burdens of worry, planning, and all the worries about the past are completely gone. When you understand how heavy those two suitcases are, then you have the incentive to put them down. So when you do the perception of the pain of the past and the future, it makes it easy to let them go completely. Even when you're in the middle of a meditation, please don't even concern yourself the slightest about how the meditation has gone so far. That's what happens sometimes during the middle of a sit. You've been thinking, you've been tired, things haven't gone well, and you think this is a terrible meditation. Can you see your mistake there? This isn't a terrible meditation. What you're saying, this has been, this was, the past. You're just putting the present moment in the prison of the past experience. Just making the present moment miserable because the past has been miserable. You actually carry the past into the present moment, and that's a big mistake. Every moment in the meditation, make it a moment which is free from the past. Who cares what's happened just now? It doesn't matter at all what you've just been through. If you can let go of the past, the future is completely free. You can change in an instant, and it sometimes does. People have these experiences in meditation. One moment they're in pain, the next minute it's completely gone. It shows you just how the present moment can be so free of the past, if you let it. So don't carry anything from the past into the present moment, and don't sacrifice the present moment for some promise of the future. Let it all go, because the past and the future are suffering, as is all this thinking which goes on. You know what it's like having thoughts? It just goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And all these thoughts, you can only see them as a lot of affliction and burden and suffering. There's one of the similes which the Buddha used, and I reused it a couple of weeks ago. He said that just like a young man or a young woman going out for the night, if they suddenly discovered they were wearing a carcass of a dead dog around their neck. This is a dead one, not a sort of a live one. Smelly, stinking, rotting. And they just sort of put on their best dress or suit, they would be disgusted, they would be alarmed, they would try and get that carcass of a dead dog off straight away and throw it away. In the same way, monks, said the Buddha, why do you put these thoughts around your beautiful mind like the carcass of a dead dog around a well-washed, dressed body? And that's how the Buddha actually looked at the thinking, just like the carcass of a dead dog. It's a carcass, it's dead, simply because it is of the past. Every thought you have is always about things which have passed away. It's dead stuff. You thought about something which has happened. It is a sum of thoughts, experiences which have already gone. If you really know what the present moment truly is, you can't think in the present moment. Just there's no space there to say anything. If you're right in the middle of the present moment, it's silent. Similarly, I gave in my little meditation booklet, the basic method of meditation, was a simile of a host at a party. A host at a party, you're greeting the guests as they come in. And if you have a conversation with the guests coming in now, you'll miss the guests coming right behind because there's no space between these guests. They're coming in every moment. So you can't afford even to say the guest's name. Because if you do, you miss two more guests or three more coming right behind. You have to just greet the guest and then greet the next guest and then greet the next guest. You haven't got time for conversation. And that's what the present moment is like. The present moment flows seamlessly, one moment after another. And if you pause to say something about the present moment, you miss so many other present moments which are coming right behind. To really know the moment, you have to know it in silence. But the point here is that if we can only see this thinking mind as being so much pain, if we did not delight in thoughts, if we didn't give thoughts value, then they wouldn't stay so long inside our heads. So try doing a dukkha sanya, the perception of the suffering with thinking. Why am I doing this? It's so yucky, it's a burden. And when you do get peaceful, when there is silence in the mind, you should know that, oh, this is wonderful. It is so peaceful, beautiful, happy to have a silent mind. And that just reinforces the message that this inner conversation is just like this terrible music. Imagine you're living next to some young guys who've got their music on 24 hours a day. And it goes on for so long. You get fed up and tired of it. And that's just like your mind sometimes. Yak, 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 yak. Another simile which I gave a couple of years ago, it's like that when you were born, when you were asleep in your cot or somewhere, these two demons crawled into your ears, one in your left ear, one in the right ear, these two monsters, and they got in your brain, and they're having this conversation all the time ever since you were born, which is your thinking. They're just two little monsters in there arguing with each other. It would be wonderful if you can actually get those two monsters out and have a bit of peace and quiet for the first time in your life so there's no thinking, because thinking is monster stuff. It never stops for many people. But then one time you may come to a retreat like this and those two monsters get pulled out of your ears and there's quietness inside your head for the first time in your life. Oh, this is so wonderful. So have peace inside. So using the perception that the thinking is pain, is suffering, is a burden, is an affliction, helps you abandon it, to let it go. If you think it's important, you will never let it go. If you take something to be like a valuable jewel, then you'll delight in having it around your neck. But if you realize it is like the carcass of a dead dog, then what am I doing this for? You can actually let it go. So the perception of the suffering of thinking allows you to let it go. Now you should all know that things like body is suffering. And how many times you've been hurting with your body. So why can't you let your body go and just disappear? Aches and pains? Why do I have to feel that? Strange that we think that we're attached to our body intrinsically. That we have to feel the aches and pains in the body. You don't have to. As everybody knows, people who are like great sports people, they may be playing a game of football and break their leg, they keep on going, they don't even feel the pain. You only feel it because you're interested in your body. You're just too afraid to let it go. Strange thing. It's not the body disturbs us. We disturb the body. Sajjan Chah said, it's not sounds disturb us, we disturb the sound. To go further into that, why is it we can't let go of the sounds outside? Why can't we just close our eyes, sit and not be concerned about what the person sitting next to us is doing, or what the birds are doing, or what other sounds are going on outside. It is not that the sounds disturb us. If you have enough mindfulness and insight, you actually see your mind going out looking for something to disturb you. I've seen that plenty of times in my meditation. I'm sitting here, and you go looking for your body. Where have my hands gone now? Where have my knees gone? You know, is the tummy okay? It was okay until you looked for it, and then you think, it's aching now. It's finally gone away, and you went to disturb it, and it's come back again. You went looking for it. Why? Because you're used to it, you're attached to it, you're saying it's your body. If it wasn't my business, you can leave it alone. You can detach. If the sound is not your business, you can just leave it go. It's a wonderful thing to be able to sit here. And all the sounds outside, you couldn't give a damn about those sounds. They're nothing to do with me, just a pain. They're just passing through. Then they disappear. It is this sense of ownership, control, causes a problem. Those of you who've got chronic sicknesses, how many times you try to control that body, trying to find a way out, trying to find a cure? Can't do it. Cures are only temporary. So after a while, just what the hell? Had enough of this body. You just leave it alone. Not my business, just a bunch of pain. Why do I even bother about it? Leave it alone, disengage. Then you don't interfere. You sever the link to your body during the meditation. The body is there, but I am not bothered. That way, you become really, really peaceful and still. So these are three ways, three attitudes to help with the letting go, which is important for this meditation. Whatever you're experiencing, look at it as being none of my business, just things passing through the anicca, and it's a bunch of suffering and pain anyway. Why am I bothered with this? Throw it away. When you can do that, the letting go does become easier. And just to give you the basic method, the stages of meditation, what happens when you do let go is, first of all, you let go of time. No past, no future, you're in the moment. Then you let go of this yak 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 thinking mind, so there's no inner commentary. Then you usually catch on to one object to focus the mind, which is a stepping stone for letting go of your body with its five senses. It's great if you can just let go of your body immediately, and sometimes some monks do this, I sometimes do this. I don't even bother with the breath. Go straight from present moment awareness and silence into a nimitta. But if you can't let go of your body completely all in one go, let go of all of the body except just the breathing. And then you let go of the breathing, so the whole body has disappeared. When you're watching the breathing, just breathing in, breathing out, you can't feel your legs, you can't feel your arms, you're not listening to sounds because you're watching your breath. You're letting go of most of the body. Just focusing on one part of the body. So, from present moment awareness to silence to watching one thing, such as a feeling of the breath, then the breath disappears. When the breath disappears, don't do anything. Just stay there. If you've got nothing to watch, then just watch nothing. In that nothing, nimittas soon appear. And don't forget the happiness in meditation. Just to enjoy every moment. Allow the happiness, the energy to come up, which comes up naturally. It'll come up by itself. Don't need to go and worry about it. The more still you are, the less you do, the more happy you become. And when that happiness gets strong enough, you get this beautiful nimitta. These are all signs of letting go. The body has now disappeared. You've got a beautiful light in the mind. It's the first sign of the citta, the sixth sense appearing. Just don't do anything. None of my business again. Don't go attaching at the last minute, thinking this is the real you. This is the thing you've really been wanting all the time. Nothing to do with you. Nimittas are none of your business. Remember that saying yesterday, the path is but no traveller on it is seen. As soon as there's a traveller, you stop the path. It's soon as there's a you doing this, the path is blocked. Nibbana is, but not the person who enters it. Might even say that for jhanas. The jhanas are, but you can't get in there. You have to get out, leave the ego, the self, outside for you to be able to enter. And this is none of my business, nothing to do with me. Leave it alone. Just things passing through, and then you can enter because you're disengaging from the process. The controller is being put aside. And those are the stages of the meditation. Present moment awareness, silence, watching the breath, breath disappears, nimitta arises into jhanas. Very easy. I can't see why you're all messing around and not getting into jhanas every meditation. However, if you're not, I'm just giving you some help. All those obstacles, not my business, nothing to do with me, a lot of bunch of suffering just passing through. So you're not picking up these obstacles and making them a big burden. You're not engaging. You're disengaging. The main purpose of the meditation is to let go, to not control, to be patient, allow things to disappear. That's what we're supposed to be doing. However, for the last 6 months or so, to help people even further, I just, so you know where you are, I've taught the three levels of every stage in meditation. The first level is recognition. The second level is familiarity. And the third level is comfort. So, it's just like you come in this retreat. I don't know how you slept last night. I've been sleeping in this place for once or twice a year for I don't know how many years now. But still, it's just the nature of my body. Whenever I go to a new place for the first time, the first night I never get a deep sleep. It's just my body and my mind needs to become familiar with my surroundings. Second night is always nice. So it's the same was with you. You didn't sleep well last night. Don't worry. Tomorrow night you'll really get into a nice deep sleep. Or rather tonight. The first time you come to a place, you always have some physical tension. But when you recognize the place, then you feel familiar with the place. When you come here many times after several evenings, you are so familiar, you relax and get comfortable. The tension, the being on edge disappears. And that's the same, you know, for those of you who know me, sometimes still people say, oh, they see a monk and they get very afraid of, you know, seeing a monk, about a powerful monk. But when you sort of get recognize me, you get familiar with me, then you couldn't give a damn. You just relax and you tell silly jokes, whatever you do. Because you're familiar and you're relaxed. You're not on edge anymore. And that's when you find comfort, say in my presence or in sister's presence. It's the same in every stage of meditation. For the present moment, first of all, you have to recognize what this present moment is. What is it? What is this thing Ajahn Brahm keeps talking about, the present moment? When people begin meditation, they have a difficulty there because they can't recognize what we're talking about. They haven't been there before. After enough mindfulness and practice, you can recognize what this thing actually is. The more times you recognize the present moment, the more you will grow in familiarity. You know what it is. And when you're familiar with the present moment, after a while the next stage comes, the next level, you're comfortable there. You can hang out there. You can relax there. It's just like a second home for you. You know, here comes the present moment, great. You're not tense, you're not controlling, you're relaxed because recognition, familiarity, comfort. Same thing happens with the silence. In our modern world, sometimes people have never been silent since they've been alive. I remember talking to this Catholic many years ago in Bunbury, and I was just quiet for a few minutes, and she said, say something, because she'd been born in a big family where there'd never been more than about 1 minute of silence when someone wasn't speaking. It was crazy. I couldn't believe that someone could live like that. No, you know, obviously in a monastery you have so many hours of solitude, most of our day no one is speaking. And we're familiar with that. We're comfortable in silence, external silence. And how much more so, being meditators, are we comfortable with the inner silence? So first of all, you recognize what inner silence is. There it was again. Sometimes I use this trick to try and get people to understand what we mean by inner silence. Because when you were waiting for me to speak, that was silence. You weren't even thinking inside, because you didn't know when I was going to carry on speaking. It's a little like technique, a trick, to show people what silence is. It's like a listening. You're not talking inside. You're not second guessing what's happening. There's no commentary. You are in pause mode, receiving the information from the world. So once you can recognize what it is, after a while you recognize that silence is actually quite common. Then you can't become familiar with it. You can recognize it all the time. There it was again. See? And after familiarity, you get comfortable with the silence. You can just relax into it. And with silence, it's important to have that comfort. Otherwise, it just gets disturbed all the time. So once you can recognize, you become familiar, you're comfortable, you just hang out in the silence. The more you hang out in it, the more joyful and peaceful it gets. And it's just, again, it's better than a second home. It's like your holiday home, the inner silence. And then you go deeper into the breath. Again, sometimes you spend hours talking to people. What are you supposed to watch with the breath? Not your belly, not your nose. It's not belly meditation. It's not nose meditation. It's not ear or throat meditation. It's breath meditation, for goodness sake. So, for many people, if they teach them when they begin their career in meditation, it's great to get them before they've learned something else. I just tell them to close your eyes, breathe in and out three times. After the third breath, open your eyes. Then I ask them, how did you know you breathed in and out three times? Well, there's some feeling inside which tells you you're breathing in or breathing out. That is what you watch. So you recognize the feeling of the breath, what tells you you're breathing in or breathing out. When you recognize that feeling, you become familiar with that feeling. And then you can be comfortable with that feeling. You just hang out with the feeling of the breath. If you're not comfortable there, you tend to tense up, holding the breath. Like you hold a silence and you disturb it. It cracks with thinking. So the comfort is an important stage with every, important level with every stage of the meditation. Remember, recognition, familiarity and comfort. And how much more so is that important when the breath disappears? I'm just a question which comes up so often in the interview times is, I was watching the breath, it disappeared, but I didn't know what to watch. What happens when the breath disappears? Recognize that. It's a silence, an emptiness, whatever it is, recognize it. Then you become familiar with that state when the breath disappears. Then you won't have to ask, what am I supposed to watch? You recognize, you're familiar, and you can just hang out there. You're comfortable just watching nothing. Or what happens when the breath disappears? You know that state, you recognize it, become familiar with it, and then you're comfortable, so you don't disturb it. It's all part of the process. Nothing is going wrong. It's just you are not comfortable there. You don't know what to do. You can't let go. You get involved and you start to control some more. So recognize what it is, become familiar with it, and then you're comfortable. When you're comfortable, you can just hang out there. And you have to get to the stage of comfort before the next thing happens, which is the nimitta starts to arise. And again, sometimes people say, I don't know if I saw a nimitta, or was it a nimitta, what was it? You're just starting the stage of recognition. You've got to recognize, what is this thing called nimitta? And after a bit of experience and listening to monks like myself, you can actually, oh, that's what it is. You get recognition in the same way you can recognize the silence in the mind. You're recognizing something which is you haven't had much experience with before. And after recognizing the nimitta, you get to the next stage of familiarity. Here it comes again. It's an old friend. When it's an old friend, you don't tense up around it. You don't try and be someone, something you're not, or try and show off. You just relax and be yourself, or rather be your no-self. When you can really relax, you're familiar with that nimitta, then you're comfortable there. You just hang out with the nimitta. Because of that, it stays. This is the three levels of even being with a nimitta. Recognizing it, it's the first level. Familiarity, and then comfort. It's only after the comfort that you can enter a jhana. Nimitta just there, having a great time. You're so comfortable, at ease with these powerful experiences. Even when it gets very blissful and powerful, you recognize that bliss and power, you're familiar with it. You're just comfortable blissing out. Might seem strange for many of you. Of course I'll be comfortable blissing out. No, you're not. Sometimes it's such a weird experience to have so much ecstasy, so much bliss. You tend to tense up and the whole thing just fractures and falls apart. With recognizing familiarity, you just comfort. You just allow the bliss to take you. As much as you want. Who cares? That way you get to those deeper stages where you're at the gateway into the jhanas. And even when you're in the jhanas, sometimes you have what I've sometimes called a ping pong jhana, where you go into the jhana because you don't recognize where you are, what the hell's going on. You're not at all familiar, you tense up and the whole thing disappears. But you do that a few times, ping pong jhanas, you get a bit of recognition, a bit of familiarity, you can just get comfortable, you just let go completely, and then the jhana stays. So the three levels: recognition, familiarity, and comfort. With the stages, present moment awareness, silence, watching the breath, looking the breath disappear, seeing an nimitta coming up, getting into jhanas. All because you've done the path of letting go. Don't try to get those stages. That's doing things. When you get out of the way, you're saying all these things are just a bunch of suffering, not my business, just things passing through, then you are setting up the mind for renunciation, for letting go, and then the things happen. You try and make them happen, no way. You expect them to happen, never happen. But you just renounce, give up, let go, put down the jar, the cup, the bottle, and it happens all by itself. You find how easy it is when you get out of the way. The path is, but no traveller on it is seen. When there's a traveller, there is no path. So the traveller, the journey person, see if you can actually allow that to disappear. And the path just manifests. So easy. Okay, that's a long talk this morning, but really getting to the heart of the meditation. Keeping the underlying principles, but also giving you something to work on. Any questions about so far? Any comments, questions? Okay, if you have any, you think of any, you can put them on a piece of paper. And after you've got to put them on a piece of paper, look at it and think, do I really want to ask this? And then tear it up and throw it away. That's the best way of dealing with the questions. Write it down, this is a stupid question, throw it away. And do the same with all your thoughts. Look at this thought, what a stupid thought it is. Write down the thought, screw it up, throw it away. And then you're free and empty. Wouldn't that be a wonderful, wonderful way to live life? Okay, there's no questions, comments, complaints. You know exactly what not to do, so please, for the rest of this morning, don't do a thing. Okay? You're doing something again. Don't even think. Just throw everything away. Okay.